contributor, 15 minutes stopped, is Rem Koolhaas, the Office of Metropolitan Architecture in Rotterdam, and he's going to talk about, does public space matter to public life?
I've been a little bit disturbed that we have been kind of discussing, immediately launching a discussion of New York, Paris, and that we have been kind of, in a very distant way, been talking about other urban phenomena in the developing world. And I want to talk about the developing world first before I address some things here, because in fairness, if we continue to describe the world where most urban developments currently take place as developed, then in fairness, we should call ourselves finished. And I think there's been some evidence of that. I want to say that, ironically, the definitive triumph of the urban condition, and in my lecture is going to really present it in terms of a number of theses and a number of questions. My first thesis is that, ironically, the definitive triumph of the urban condition makes the vocabulary that we use to describe the city completely inadequate. And I think that this book, Jane Jacobs, now so famous, although it has been a very important book, started a kind of disconnect that we are still suffering in terms of cutting off intellectually the way of thinking of the city in a progressive way and launching urban thinking in a drastic way in the path of conservatism on the one hand and even nostalgia. Another question that I want to raise at this point is, how is it that the use of public space, the issue of public space, has never been more hot and has never counted more professionals than at the moment where the world converted to the market economy, in other words, entrusts the definition of what is public to the private sector? In terms of showing very briefly why I think the issues that New York presents and London presents are in a certain way at this point really issues of how to maintain very ancient and very large cities, it can only be kind of understood in the context of other urban development and massive urban development as it is taking place in both the very poor part of the world in Africa and in the kind of increasingly affluent parts of East Asia. What is really unique here in these conditions, both in the poor zones and the richer zones, is that urban development is taking place at the pace it has never taken place before, and therefore we cannot really measure it or discuss it in any previous conditions. Also, what I think is dangerous is to discuss the world and therefore the urban condition in a situation as if there is a relative similarity between conditions in the world. I would simply point out this condition where in the darker red everyone is below 20 or the vast majority is between 20. So there is a kind of youth condition there that in itself completely colors the question of the city. And then there is, for instance, also the question of literacy, almost coinciding with that, where basically vast numbers of new urban inhabitants are illiterate and therefore, by definition, doomed to participate in the condition of the city in a different way. Now, while we agonize over public space in our sector of the world, ironically, in the poor cities such as Lagos, public space is absolutely not an issue. And I would say that public space is the dominant experience of the city. Every square meter of the city is used both intensely for private life and public life. There's almost a merger of the two. And I've never seen with my own eyes a kind of larger intensity of urban transaction than in these kind of really poor conditions. I would say that another irony and perhaps potentially a tragedy taking place in the kind of richer South Asian conditions is that, for instance, in China, where we have, whether we want it or not, a state
which is not entirely committed to the market economy and therefore still has the potential to generate large and collective entities, and therefore another kind of city, is confronted through us by highly debased forms of urban modernity and a consistent import of Western precedent, which is not really very useful. So this is one kind of general introduction in terms of the rest of the discussion. The word memory and public space are almost coincidental. And at the same time, I would kind of suggest that currently we have a very tortured and bizarre relationship with that, particularly in the West. Our anxiety, another thesis, our anxiety about the past, about memory, is in direct proportion to our success in destroying it. And I will want to show you a number of very typical events. This is the former headquarters of Hitler in Berchtesgaden in Germany, and it has recently been turned into a wellness center. Now, I would say that a culture, you know, like Western culture, that makes such completely drastic transformations so thoughtlessly, partly again in the name of private, the private sector, is seriously dysfunctional in its defense of what is public. We can also see that we are currently kind of indulging in vast projects of artificial memory that go very often at the expense of the original memory. And perhaps the dismantlement of the Berlin Wall has been one of the staggering examples where simply a monument that itself would have shown louder and harder what the former tragedy had been in this site has been dismantled literally and then kind of replaced by a series of kind of much more professional memory factories or fabricators that now dedicate vast territories to a memory that could have been kept in its original form. Art is increasingly complicit, I would say, not in terms of introducing another world, but in denaturing the public realm, even good art, such as here Amish Kapoor, which has to be policed also because it may no longer be, in the name of copyright, being photographed. Now, it is a cliché that public space is not what it was and that it has increasingly been contained. But what is less evident is that in a kind of form of another thesis, in a form of involuntary mass portraiture, we allow ourselves in a Faustian bargain where we trade privacy for security to be the willing participants in a regime of constant surveillance, apparently only when one of us gets caught, usually it is too late. We, and our public space shows that, I think, we live on a curious diet of harmlessness alternating with catastrophe, which, of course, kind of through modern devices kind of is now expanded also kind of simply in the air. Now, what worries me in is the complicitness of the design activity field to all these 10 trends and its inability to think of a kind of resistance. There is an incredible proliferation of new firms that are not quite design firms, not quite landscape firms, but firms that specialize in the design of public space and that kind of produce folders like this one, where words like audacity, vivacity, elasticity, kind of all those elements that are kind of really being increasingly removed are advocated. And we see a new kind of rhetoric. It is very noticeable in this conference, by the way, that the word gentrification, that even 10 years ago had a very negative connotation, has now become frankly positive. That in this kind of gentrification of urban life situation, urban life has been kind of reduced to four sectors: film screening, music, shopping, and fashion. And we've seen, therefore, a kind of systematic laundering of authentic conditions in urban life in the name of those four categories. Here you see a proud, and here this kind of shift or flip of gentrification is very obvious, before and after, and basically I realize also in this room that maybe 70% of you think that the lower picture is better than the 30% of us who think that the upper picture is actually more attractive. And here, so increasingly the design of our public space has become a hyper-nostalgic celebration. Here, another kind of form of absolute denial. This is turned into this. Has become a hyper-nostalgic celebration of its absence. On the one hand, we have a kind of faux Republican style of vapid emblems of former civility distributed across patient acres of granite. On the other hand, over-scripted labyrinth of infotainment, nothing between fascism light and gentrification. A kind of phantom Potemkin civility, a kind of Potemkin civility, bathing in phantom sustainability. And in that sense, I hope that later we have a kind of discussion with Richard Sennett, who introduced, of course, the civility issue. And I would like to confront him with how the civility message and incentive is. Thank you. I see it. Yeah. And this incentive, I'm already racing. So this incentive is actually taken up. We are complicit in an operation where public-private partnerships, high-tech policing, even artists with their kind of voracious hunger for edgy Lebensraum contribute not only to massive gentrification, but leading to, and this is my challenge to Richard, to a situation that could be recapitulated as gentility or death. As the kind of the ultimate outcome of this form of urbanization. What worries me kind of seriously about, and where I think it is exacerbated, and now I come back to the kind of situation of China, and why what we now produce in terms of public space is so kind of negative and dangerous. The irony is that many of these kind of regions that are now urbanizing are tropical, and soon will become that through global heating. But under the market regime, that tropicality will be countered by air conditioning, not regime change, which will make all these imagined utopias largely irrelevant. The outside is evacuated, the inside conditioned, and the public turns into a captive audience. I really have listened with appreciation to Sarkis' inventory of architectural strategies that could be mobilized in these circumstances. But on the other hand, I've experienced too often myself the kind of problem that the hurry itself will be used and the speed will be used against these alternatives that will be depicted simply as experimental and untested, and therefore, again, in the current market economy, not be relevant. Duffy asked for a radicalization of the debate, asking for memory and stimulus. What I think about this conference as a whole, it may be the most exciting potential of this conference, is that we are discussing the city at the exact moment of its disappearance, and that therefore we should oblige ourselves not to look back at what we have lost, but at what we might have to gain. Thank you.